This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Is that tea?
This is iced coffee.
Iced coffee.
Okay. Do you want some tea, Tony?
No, I'm okay, thank you. I'm fine.
So, could the basic question, could you talk a little bit about how you got involved in the project, and was there any hesitation about getting involved?
There was at the beginning. My agent sent me this script, and I didn't know much about it, but I thought, well, I didn't want to play another spooky guy, you know, and I wasn't sure, and I think I was in the middle of doing Thor when this came up. I'm not sure what, maybe it's about over a year ago, and I wasn't quite sure whether I really wanted to do anything like this, and then I read the script, and then I met Michael Halfstrom at the hotel up the road here. We had breakfast, and I was pretty impressed by him. He seemed a very nice guy, very intelligent guy, and I'd seen one or two of his films. So I said yes, and then he went back to England, and I started working on the part, reading it and working on it, and I had a couple of ideas. So I'd email him some of those ideas that had helped me understand this man a little more. And that was it. So I learned the lines, learned the Italian and the Latin, which took a bit of time. And but I don't know what my beliefs are about any of it, really. There's a scene in you've seen the film?
Yes.
There's a scene in the courtyard after the first exorcism when I'm talking to the young priest, Colin O'Donoghue, who, in his character, has grave doubts about it. He thinks it's all a bag of tricks, you know, and he thinks it's all mumbo-jumbo, and maybe there's no such thing, which is the debate. Is there such a thing as an anthropomorphic presence of the devil, or is it a mental disturbance? That's the debate, I guess, that's in the film and probably in the world. And after that, I said, you know, the problem is with skeptics and atheists is that we never know the truth. We are always trying to find the truth. What would we do if we found it? And I asked Michael if I could write that line. So describe myself as an atheist, as a skeptic, which makes the young priest turn his view. He said, oh yeah, every day I struggle with my unbelief. Or most days, or some days I don't know whether I believe in God or Santa Claus or Tinkerbell. And those are my lines. Because I think nobody knows. It gives a semblance of humanity to somebody who says they don't know. Anyone who says they know, like Colin, you know, the young priest says, I believe in the truth. Oh, the truth, yeah. A lot of trouble that got us into, didn't it, over the last thousands of years. Hitler knew the truth, so did Stalin, so did Mao Zedong, so did Torquemada of the Inquisition. They all knew the truth, and that caused such horror. And certainty is the enemy. In certainty, I think, resides, if there is such a devil, it resides the entity of... It's like anyone saying, you know, the debate is over. Who says it's over? They come on television. The debate is over. We know. We? Who? Human beings? We know nothing. Human beings? We know nothing. And, you know, someone said, but are you an atheist? Well, I don't know what I believe, but who would I be to refute someone like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who sacrificed his life for his church, you know, and ended up in Flossenbürg being executed by the Nazis, or Niemöller, who, you know, defended the faith, or the great martyrs who died at the stake or were destroyed for their personal beliefs. So who am I to refute anything? I mean, I know a couple of atheists and brilliant men, like, you know, I won't name names, but I would hate to live in a world of certainty, of a closed circuit, of a windowless room, where I know for certain, like Jean-Paul Sartre's We Glory, you know, that we're living in hell, of a closed dungeon. I'd rather live with uncertainty, because Socrates was told that he was the wisest man in Athens, and he said, well, that's not likely. So he went on looking for people who were wiser than him, and he found them. He said, I'm glad I don't know anything. And I think it was Plotinus. Somebody said, you know, be kind, because everyone is fighting a great battle. And whatever the devil is or is not, I think when we turn our backs on our own frailty and our own humanity and say we know for certain we know the truth, then we are in trouble.
Was this a great opportunity to exercise all your acting muscles, because this character goes to so many different levels and extremes in a way?
To exercise?
Your acting muscles, because acting. You can go in with this character,
yeah.
You can go to such different levels, you know, when in the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie.
Well, I have to play a man who is seemingly good, priest, man of God, and then next thing he's become Hannibal Lecter or something like that. He's become so weird that, I suppose it's a challenge, but you know, I'm adept at that. I've been doing this a long time now, so I know how to prepare the parts. I don't have to become a priest, or I don't have to become possessed.
Did you visit exorcisms the way I think Colin did?
I didn't. He was in Rome longer than I was. Because I was only in Rome for one day, I think. Oh, I did from one scene in Rome. But Colin was there for about a week, and I think he went to an exorcism with Father Gary.
Right. Yeah.
And he said, and I think maybe he went to two or three of them. I know the writer did. They went to a couple of exorcisms. The thing is that it is a debate. Does it exist? Or, you know, I don't know how much the Catholic Church is involved in this. Apparently they've pulled back a little on their commitment. And Father Gary, he's the one to talk to about that. I've asked him. Have you interviewed him yet?
Yes.
Oh. So I said, I didn't want to. I said, you believe? He said, oh, yeah. I said, okay. I said, how do you know? He said, you can tell. I said, okay. So you look in the eyes and you can tell. I said, oh.
You've become very adept at scaring people with an expression in a couple of films now. Could you talk a bit about that? I mean, how do you know...
About that?
How do you know what's...
I don't know.
...to scare the audience?
I honestly don't know. I've asked myself that question many times. I don't know, but I guess I have a knack for it. But it doesn't mean to say that I'm the scary person. My wife's not scared of me. I'm scared of her. No, she's not. She. But I can do it to. She. You know. I think women are more susceptible to this. And when I'll give her that. She don't look at me like that. And I don't know how to do it. I don't know. It's just. It's that thing. It's some. When I was a kid. My father wasn't a very healthy man. He took me to see Dracula when I was about five, you know.
Wow.
Bela Lugosi. And I don't know, they didn't seem to have ratings, you know. I saw Frankenstein, first of all, with Boris Karloff, and then Bela Lugosi's Dracula. And I think, like all... It's like we all flirt with chaos. We all go into a dark movie theater to give ourselves a scare. It's like, you know, if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict or something, we flirt with death. We pull ourselves to the brink of destruction, and if we're lucky, we'll pull ourselves back. We all have that in us. We all have that destructive, whether it's overeating or it's overworking or oversex or whatever it is, or alcoholism, drug addiction, whatever it is, we push ourselves to the brink and then pull back because it's kind of exciting. But that's all I know. I just know how to scare people, but I don't know how I do it. But it's a look, it's a trick, I guess. Michael Hofstrom, it was a great audience for me, because when we just started the exorcism scenes, we were just rehearsing, and as Colin walks in, I just look at him like that. And Michael says, you're crazy. So it's like, I don't know. But it's only a look. It's, I think you deaden the eyes. It's a trick, that's all it is.
Yeah.
But I know it scares because I know I can sense inside what it does. So I'm tapping into something that is a shadow part of myself, I guess. But
we were talking to Michal about working together, the two of you, and his quote was, every actor wants to be directed. And I'm just wondering, at this point in your career, what is the balance that you like? Do you like to be directed closely, or do you like to be able to bring something new to that might not be on the page and have the freedom to do that on the set?
Oh.
Where is that balance?
Well, it depends, because with Mikhail, he's very open. It's a balancing act. It's a trick. You know, if you... Like, there's a little scene when I'm in the courtyard and I say, I don't know if I believe in God or something, like somebody said, Lord, I wrote that. not because I'm clever, but I wrote it because I wanted to fit, like a glove, a piece of myself in there, because that's what I believe. I don't know what I believe, myself personally. But with Mikhail, I said, do you mind if I do this? No, let's do it. So I wrote it out, and I be sure that the writer doesn't object to it. And he said, no, I think it's fine. So then you can breathe a sigh of relief. And then you start, and I remember that particular scene, and Mikhail said, okay, let's do it again. He said, we're going in a little close. He said, yeah, he said, you got it the first time, but let's go and just do one more. He said, there's something. I said, okay. What? He said, I don't know. Just do it. Okay, let's go. Action. And then suddenly you get it. You just fall into rhythm of it. And he comes to that. I said, that's it. I think you got it. I said, yeah, I feel good about that. Ken Branagh is a different kind of director. We did Thor. He does many takes. He's a superb actor and a terrific director. But he likes to get the best out of people. So there's a scene where I have to banish Thor and play Odin. And Ken is quite smart. He said, we got it, that's fantastic. Just one more. And he pushes that finger. He said, what? He said, just get the grief within the guy. And he's banishing. He said, oh, okay, got it. Okay, let's go. Boom. Got it. So Spielberg is the same. He said, just the one more take. Do one more. I said, what do you want? You know. And it's okay, and you think, oh, and you can't talk about it. You can't use intelligence or rationale, but you can, because you can think it to death, or you can overdo it, and you can do take after take, and you end up doing nothing. So it's a balance, and it's like being on a seesaw. And with Mikhail, and he let me very much go on the exorcism scene. I knew how to do those scenes, and as a scene, I said, when Colin comes back into the room, my chair has been. He's now facing him, like a bit like the exorcist. He said, oh, yeah. So suddenly the chair's moved around, and I'm just sitting there staring at him as he comes in the room. And
it's going to be fun, right?
You have fun with it. And I know what scares people. I know what is scary on film, because that's my that's what I do. And I not because I'm like that, but I you know, for a long time, I sort of had a sneaky little grumble. I thought, oh, I'll never get over Hannibal Lecter. You know, I've done that. Yeah. And then I saw the posters and people, and they said, well, it's sold, so if it does the trick, then fine. I mean, I've played other parts, but I've played many more parts. I've only played two bad men, I think. Lecter, and this guy's not bad. This is a chance to play two parts, you know.
You mentioned Thor. I was curious, based on the footage and what I've read, it seems it's very Shakespearean. Was it? Did you notice that with the material, or
with Thor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what. Well, it's a big movie. Branagh's extraordinary how he directed that, put that together. I don't know, but well, it's the grand passion. You know, it's a big. It's all about gods, so you have to do a little bit of experience acting to play a god.
Did you? If I could just do one other thing, did you actually read any of the comics, or no. How did you get yourself ready to play Odin? It's such a big character in the Marvel universe.
Well, I don't know. I saw the sets. I saw the designs of the sets and what I was going to wear, and went to the studio down in Manhattan Beach and saw what they were going to put on me and all that. I thought, oh, well. So when they dressed me up, I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm God now. So it was a bit difficult to move around because they had steep steps because everything's... That was quite tiring because it's about 25 to 30 pounds you're carrying around with you all day. And you can't really take much of a rest. So, but you know, you just come on set and, you know, it's a huge set and you're in armor and the camera's pointing at you, oh, I'm God, so.
Tony, as you've alluded to, you know what you're good at, you know what you're known for. And for some producers, that may seem that you are a commodity. But do you allow that to overshadow the art, the piece, the love
being a commodity?
You're for? Yes.
I don't mind being a commodity. It's given me a good life. Mm-hmm. Art, well, I don't know about art. You know, when you're doing a movie, I'm not being cynical, but when you're doing a movie, you have a number of choices to do as an actor. You put this here, and you put then you see it all cut together, and all those little precious pieces you put in maybe on the cutting room floor. So you don't have that much control. You have very little control, in fact. It's up to the editor, the director, and the final product is, you know, whatever the film studio desires. So to be realistic is a great freedom. I have no illusions about my position in this world as an actor or anything like that. No illusions at all. I'm very realistic. Reality is a very liberating thing. That what is so liberating about this whole business is when you see that the big movies are going to come out, huge movies are going to come out, and then you see them up in Malibu in the little triplex theatre a week later on the scratch negative. You think, well, that's it. Oh, I remember seeing Raging Bull. I was in London at the time, and De Niro's Raging Bull is coming out. I can't wait to see it. And then I got back to New York. This was many years ago, 30 years ago. Got to New York and I saw it in a little kind of mall. And only a few people. It's very interesting because I was down in, for example, I was down in, I went to Graceland for my birthday about 2 years ago in Memphis with my wife. And we knew a woman there who ran her family owns a lot of cinemas. Anyway, cut a long story short, we went out to this place outside of Memphis where this big movie theater was. What do you call them? Triplex. You know, all those about 12 theaters
multiplex.
All in one multiplex. And I went in there, and it was a Saturday morning, and I could smell the popcorn and people going in and going to these multiplex little theaters, and they had, the latest Clint Eastwood film, the Gran Torino or whatever, and other movies, big movies. And I just happened to look in my, I said, come on, and there were people sitting eating their popcorn, just waiting for the movie to start. I thought, that's it. This is show business. This is the great movie career. And it's all finally in the shoebox. So it's a great liberation thinking that none of it is important. It's a great feeling that nothing matters anymore. It was quite a revelation.
How do you react when you are watching television and suddenly one of so many movies that you have done?
Oh, I switch over to something else. I never watch them.
You don't.
So, Mikan, we got Colin's perspective as far as how it was for him to come and work with you, and he was, he had nothing but good things to say, obviously. But
I hope you had only good things to say.
No, but I'm curious. What's it like for you to work with a young actor, spend that much time with them?
Oh, you know his story. Oh, excuse me. You know his story, don't you? How he got the movie?
Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it? He from next door filmed him to the film test.
Exactly.
Sorry, what was the question?
What's it like for you to work with someone like that, fresh to it?
Oh, I just give him a very bad time. No, we first day we were doing a scene, which is not in the film actually, it was in the rain in Rome. I said, I feel very nervous. So I said, oh, well, that's okay. You don't have to be nervous. So we did the scene, and I said to him at the end, because he was a little bit, I said, is that the way you're planning to play the part? I said, what do you mean? I said, no, it's your career. I don't know. Then that signals that I'm joking, that, you don't take it seriously. So he did well. I mean, if he'd say, he said, how do you think? I said, well, that's good. It's a big close-up. You don't have to do too much with your face. Do less. That's the only tip I ever give. Catherine Nevin said that to me when I did. She said, don't act.
Right.
I said, okay. You don't need to act. And so I took that as a great compliment.
And how was the work with a young Italian girl that you had?
Oh, Marta? Marta, she's wonderful, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great performance. The
I mean, for you, how was the work with her? I mean,
well, we were all kind of devastated by what she did. I mean, it's actually those are very depressing scenes to do, and I never tried to take this business seriously. But they were at the end. We were in that dark room in the studio in Budapest, and it was no air in there, so we got tired very quickly. But it was kind of depressing. She does a remarkable performance, I think. I don't think she's here. Is she here?
No.
Liz Braga's here, though, isn't she?
Yeah.
She was terrific to work with. Yeah.
I'm curious with where you are. I'm sure you get your pick of what projects you want to do. Could you sort of talk about what your criteria is at this point and what you maybe are circling right now or thinking about doing in the future?
Well, I'm doing a film called 360 with Marais, Rachel Weisz. I can't... I don't know, really. I enjoy working, and I'm just glad that they still ask me. If they ask me to work, I'm very pleased. But what was the question?
How do you pick your projects, and what do you think might be coming up for you?
I have no idea. There may be a film with Dustin Hoffman that's coming up, but I'm not sure. I don't look. I've got a very good agent. Very good agent. UTAA. Jeremy Zimmer, Jeremy Barber, those are my agents, and I trust them to pick and choose for me, and they'll say, Jeremy will phone me, I got a script, he said, I think you ought to read it, I'd like you to read it. Or I've got two scripts, I don't think, I said, well, we'll send them over anyway, and I'll read them. But I'm not, I don't go out looking, I'm realistic. Living with reality is a very good trick, it gives you tremendous freedom, and it changes the structure of molecules of your soul by living with reality, because you don't expect anything anymore, which is a weird paradox. Non-expectation and acceptance, because the expectation leads to resentment and depression, so I have no expectations. You can ask a question. Sorry.
I was going to say, at what point did you feel so liberated? Did it happen midway, early on?
Oh, a few years ago. A few years ago, I think maybe 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. It's incremental. It starts when you reach about 70, I think, or mid 50s, 60s, I guess. You think, oh, well, this is the reality. And, when you face a certain age, you come to a certain age, you think, my God, I'm 50. God, I'm 60. 70. And you think, oh. But then there's, I'm just glad I'm not young anymore. I don't want to start all over again.
Yeah, I understand that you write music and paint. I was just wondering what these forms of art bring you that acting doesn't.
Well, my wife started me painting. I paint. I don't have an academic background in painting, and I don't have an academic background in music. But I'm liberated. I'm free, really. I just write a sort of freestyle in music, and I've got a concert in Birmingham, I think in July, on one of the festival hall in London. And I've got a shows of art in Waikiki and in Hawaii. And but I just paint. I paint and they sell. So I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I just do it like a kid, you know, and so that's by not being certain of anything and being open. So I go and I thought, what am I going to do today? And I'll just sketch something, or I'll sit down at the piano and start composing some music. And I don't know, I work with a young musician called Stephen Barton, and he said to me, I work in his studio, and he said, you're breaking all the rules. I said, is that? He said, keep breaking them, because he said, once you start knowing the rules, you become kind of pressed down. And it's very difficult to liberate yourself from what you've learned. It's almost impossible, because we learn in order to survive.
So the exercise is totally different than acting for you, then?
Hmm?
The exercise of painting or writing music is totally different than acting.
You've learned
acting.
Well, acting is constricted, because you don't, you have the lines, but I improvise within what I learn on the set. I improvise with rhythms and just changes, because I've been doing it a long time. But music and painting are, I don't know if they're more satisfying, they're certainly interesting, music especially. And it seems to sell, people seem to like what I do, so I go on doing it until they don't like it.
How long have you been playing piano?
Hmm?
Sorry, no expectations.
No expectations. Ask nothing, expect nothing, and accept everything. Then life is free.
How long have you actually been playing piano?
Since I was about six.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this Birmingham, is this a performance you're doing?
This is a composition. I've written three major pieces which are going to be played in Birmingham. And I had a concert in Perugia, in festival last year, Cortona in Italy. And I had a concert done in Texas 2 years ago.
Have you ever performed?
I did conduct in Texas. I was so scared. It's a very fast piece I've composed called Schizoid Salsa. And the conductor said, come on. I said, no! And he got up. And the officer was very kind to me because it was on very strict rhythm. And the problem was I didn't know when to stop because I had the score from him, but I didn't know how they took. But so I knew the... But so he said, when you start, you just go... So I said, no. He said, come on. So he got me up in front of the audience. They got a standing ovation. I said, boom! They started. I said, now we'll never stop. And I glanced over the pianist. He said, so they got a standing ovation time. And
well, how much of a challenge is acting at this point? I mean, is it just a job? Is it? Do you still have the sort of creative fire? Is doing something like this?
Well, it is a commodity. I'm a commodity. What?
I mean, is it just a job? Is it still a real? No,
it's a. It's a sure, it's a job. It's what I earn my living doing. But it's and it's they've looked after me very well. No, it's still a challenge. It's such a heavy word, that challenge. Like, Sisyphus pushing the rock up there. No, it's not a challenge in that sense. It doesn't cost me any great strain. But I enjoy the process of it. And I can't even describe it. You go on the set in the morning and you're working with whoever you're working with and you kick the lines around a little and hopefully you're going to work with somebody who's pleasant to work with and you've got a pleasant director. And sometimes that doesn't work out too well, but most of the time it does. And all in all, it's a pretty good experience. And at the end of the day, that's it. I go home, and it beats working in the theatre because that was so absorbing. You're in it all day and all night, and next day you get up, you've got to do the same thing. Which film, it's much easier. So it's something I totally enjoy, really enjoy. I really enjoy, and I look back on this film with great nostalgia when I was in Budapest and Rome. It's kind of nostalgic. It was really special, this film, to do. And I don't know if it was just the film. It was being in Budapest, being with Colin O'Donoghue and Lisa Braga and, Mikael Hofstrom, and a great producer in Bo Flynn. And so all in all, it was a very good time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Oh yes, just I only did one scene with her, just briefly. You're wonderful actors.
Is it someone's mind?
No, you're wonderful actors. Yeah, I only did one scene with him. Oh, I've gone over somebody else's.
That's okay.
I'm sorry about that. I went over Brad Pitt.
No, it's.
I crossed Brad Pitt out.
That's all right.
Who's that?
It's Oh my God! I can't believe I can't even remember.
I signed over Brad Pitt's face. No,
that's okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, all.
Marcia Gay Harden. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Happy New Year.